This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Now it's time for our weekly check-in on the top news out of the nation's capital. President George H.W. Bush's funeral was held today with all living presidents in attendance. The debate over a possible government shutdown could be delayed because of the ceremonies, and Republican senators are calling for action against Saudi Arabia after a CIA briefing on the killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Ginger Gibson is a political correspondent for Reuters. Ginger, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, some of the biggest names, Ginger, in American politics in Washington today for this observance of the late president, George H.W. Bush. What kind of things are people focusing on? What aspects of his legacy are you hearing a lot of talk about in the Capitol today?
That's right. We saw the nation's living presidents join dignitaries from around the world, as well as the United States Senate and House. In honoring George H.W. Bush's legacy, one eulogy said that he was the brightest light in his Thousand Points of Light initiative, which was how he tried to expand and grow volunteerism in America. They talked about his ability to give, the way he cared for his family, and that he gave tremendously to the U.S. in his time in a long career in public service, not just as president, but as vice president, as head of the CIA, as a member of the United States House, and as an ambassador to the United Nations.
Now, his role as president, like any president, people will debate the upsides and downsides of the presidency, and that'll go on into the future. When something like this happens, though, a former president passes away, do people on both sides of the aisle kind of set aside those debates, at least for that week?
I think so. I think that the U.S. has come to understand that our presidents are imperfect, that we have partisan disagreements about what should be done and how presidents should prioritize policy. But at the end of the day, they're viewed as having been public servants. I spoke with Nancy Pelosi on Monday as she left the first ceremony in the rotunda, and she was fighting back tears and told me that she loved George H.W. Bush, that it was an honor to have worked with him. I'm sure Nancy Pelosi disagrees with him on quite a few policy positions and quite a few of the decisions he made while he was in office. But people can put that aside. And I think people often forget or don't realize that in Washington, people interact on a human level. The journalists, the lawmakers, the presidents get to know each other. And it's not always about who thinks the other one is right or wrong, but really people in learning each other as humans.
Talking to Ginger Gibson from Reuters, looking at some of the top news in national politics. Well, Ginger, even with these observances, the politics of today do go on. They continue. We have this, once again, risk of a government shutdown. Congress with yet another spending bill deadline. The president wants a lot of border wall funding. Democrats in particular are saying he's not going to get that much. What is the current status of that debate over government funding and how that might be delayed because of what's going on this week?
That's right. We had originally expected Congress to try to hammer out a deal on government funding this week, by the end of this week. Instead, the House of Representatives canceled all of their votes. Some members didn't even come to Washington, those who were attending the funeral. And instead, we expect in the next 24 to 48 hours, Congress, with little fanfare, will pass a two-week extension of government funding, which gets us to December 21st. They're going to be pushing right up against Christmas. And there are, as you said, parts of it that have not been resolved. Republicans want to see funding for the president's wall. Democrats know that they take control of the House in January, and they are going to gain a good deal more leverage in this process. They don't want to give too much. They also don't want too much responsibility once they're in charge. So it's a delicate balance. And there is a risk that on the 21st, they could fail to come to an agreement and the government could shut down. A bit of a Grinch showing up for the Christmas holiday.
As I understand it, this might not be a complete and utter government shutdown. Some pieces of funding bills have been passed that would keep a lot of operations going on. But a partial government shutdown, as you say, over the Christmas holiday, not something that a lot of politicians necessarily want to take credit for.
That's right. They have passed some of the spending bills, things like the Pentagon, some other government operations would continue. But if you only paid one of your utility bills and they shut your gas off but left your power on, it would still be very disruptive to your home. And that's a bit of what we could be looking at in a much larger scale. A partial government shutdown would still be very disruptive for the United States.
And what signals has President Trump been sending about whether he would stand by this? I think he's looking for $5 billion in this spending bill for that border wall.
That's right. He wants $5 billion. There's been some talk that Democrats could get him $1 billion, although there has been suggestions that they're going to stick to zero for the president. He has said that he would be willing to shut the government down over his wall, that he thinks he can win the public relations battle, that he would blame Democrats for not going with him. We saw him tweeting some of the same, saying that he needed Democratic votes to stop illegal immigration. But that's a difficult public relations battle to win, especially while Republicans still control both chambers of Congress and the White House.
We're talking to Ginger Gibson, correspondent at Reuters, about some of the top national political news of the week. We'll pick up the conversation with a look at a rift between some key Republican senators and the White House over Saudi Arabia. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our conversation about the top news in national politics with Ginger Gibson from Reuters. News this week, CIA Director Gina Haspel briefed senators involved in foreign affairs committees on the investigation into the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi in Turkey at the Saudi Arabian embassy there. They concluded, the senators, that it was coordinated by the Crown Prince, a key player in Saudi Arabia. Here's a listen to Republican Senator Lindsey Graham and what he had to say after leaving that briefing.
I went into the briefing believing it was virtually impossible for an operation like this to be carried out without the Crown Prince's knowledge. I left the briefing with high confidence that my initial assessment of the situation is correct. I think Secretary Pompeo and Mattis are following the lead of the president. There's not a smoking gun, there's a smoking saw.
So very different read on this from a key Republican senator there, Ginger, versus what we've heard from the White House and key cabinet members who still say there's doubt as to whether the Saudi Crown Prince had something to do with this.
That's right. And it's important to remember that Lindsey Graham has become quite a staunch defender of the president, one of his strongest allies in the United States Senate, offering what was an unequivocal rebuke of the position the president has held, most recently saying that maybe the Crown Prince was aware, maybe he wasn't. Who really knows? Sort of like taking maybe he did, maybe he didn't position to not try to lay blame. But every senator that left that briefing seemed to be pretty adamant that there was no doubt that the Crown Prince was aware that he was not only had ordered it, but was monitoring it in real time as it happened.
And we've heard from other Republican senators, including, I think, from Bob Corker, okay, we know this happened. Now, what do we as Congress do about it? What kind of things are on the table?
There are a limited number of things. We have to remember that the Constitution, when it comes to foreign policy, gives the president quite a good deal of latitude. But Congress does have some abilities to apply pressures. They can affect the appropriations that we just talked about. They can put what are known as riders into the appropriations bills that say that the administration must do or do certain things. And they can also pass legislation if they can get an overwhelming majority that would impose sanctions. It's yet to be seen whether the president would approve such sanctions. But if there, especially this much Republican sentiment on it, one would expect to see a veto-proof majority that would be able to sort of overcome any opposition from the president.
Then we have a sentencing memo changing topics. A special counsel Robert Mueller's office told a federal court, hey, Michael Flynn, former national security advisor, a retired general, should get little or no jail time for lying to Congress, Mueller's team says, because he's been really helpful to us. And then they gave this document outlining how helpful and in what ways. And we in the public see a few lines and then lots of black lines redacting precisely how Flynn has been helpful. What can we glean from this heavily redacted document, Ginger?
That's right. It is heavily redacted. There is lots of black lines, but we know that Flynn helped in several investigations, maybe not just the ones that we have paid the closest attention to, that he may have encouraged others from the campaign or close to the president to also cooperate with investigators in a way that provided them crucial information, that he has been forthcoming, and that he possibly felt that he needed to lie because he was trying to protect the president or because he was trying to be consistent with their public messaging. And for that reason, the prosecutor said they felt that he shouldn't go to jail and that he should face very minimal punishment because of that cooperation.
And the lines we can see say something about him providing information about potential contacts between the Trump campaign and Russian officials, and also in some form of heavily redacted criminal investigation, too. I mean, I guess people are only speculating about exactly what those are, but it seems potentially like a big deal, the information he's given Mueller.
Well, we also, you're right, we have no idea what it is. Mm-hmm. It could be a criminal investigation completely unrelated to the president. So we don't know. But we tend to know that when informants, historically speaking, people who are cooperating with the government are forthcoming and the government says that they shouldn't face prison time, that tends to be because there are bigger fish to fry, and there are bigger crimes that they intend to pursue. We don't know what those are yet. We don't know when we will know what those are yet. But there does clearly be clear signs that the Mueller prosecution could result in criminal charges for someone else.
In our last few moments, Ginger, briefly, it was reported this week that the Republican National Congressional Committee was hacked during the 2018 elections. Not a lot of information about who hacked them or what was hacked. What do we know?
We know that the RNC had a small number of likely email accounts or other digital accounts hacked. I was told by the NRCC that this was a very sophisticated hack, that it indicated that it was conducted by someone who was sophisticated in cyber attacks. We don't know what was taken or what was seen or what information they were gleaning, but we do know that there was a compromise of some of their systems.
We'll be watching for more news about that. Ginger, as always, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Ginger Gibson is a political correspondent at Reuters. She was with us for a weekly check-in on the top stories in national politics. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. A recent survey by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service found that nationally about 86 million people say they're active wildlife watchers. That's an almost 30% increase from 2011 to 2016. Here in Wisconsin, getting out into nature and appreciating the diversity of wildlife in the state is nothing new, and winter actually offers some unique opportunities for both attracting wildlife to our properties and to getting out to other parts of the state to see more species. I talked to Rich Stafen earlier today. He had some great winter wildlife watching tips to share. Rich is a zoologist and conservation biologist in natural heritage conservation for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Rich, welcome to Central Time.
Glad to be here.
Well, we see in this national report, it looks like more and more people around the country are getting into wildlife watching. Why do you think interest in watching wildlife has been going up?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with partly with trail cameras. I think people are really getting into utilizing trail cameras on their property. So that would be one thing that's increasing the use. But also there's so much interest in bird watching and feeding birds that I think that's playing a large role in increasing those numbers. Even the most casual wildlife viewer seems to be really interested in bird watching. So I think that's a really large part of this increase that we're seeing.
When we think about outdoor recreation, we might think of hunting and fishing on the one hand, hiking, skiing in the winter, that sort of thing. How big a part of the story is, you know, people going out, not just the home watching now, but people going out into parks, into the wild, just to see stuff?
Yeah, I think that's the survey plays that out, that there's a large increase in people not only at their house viewing wildlife, but also getting out and about and taking in some of these phenomena that we see throughout the year, where we see large concentrations of birds or other wildlife, mammals. It seems like mammals and birds were the most popular viewing opportunities for people throughout the state and throughout the country. So, yeah, I think tapping into those large concentrations and big events that are gathered throughout the state is a big part of it.
And I know in the summer it's a great time to see some of those part-time residents of Wisconsin, the migratory birds and things like that. What are our opportunities like in the winter? What are the great things about winter when it comes to wildlife viewing?
Yeah, exactly. Most people think about birds in the summertime, but throughout the winter there's also really great opportunities, some unique resources that we have here in Wisconsin. One of those is eagle watching. So we have several opportunities on some of our larger river systems in the winter time to see large concentrations of bald eagles. There's four events scheduled throughout the winter months to take in some of these activities. There's one, the first one coming up is in January on the lower Wisconsin River near Sauk Prairie. Then there's ones in the Fox River Valley area later in January, and then it kind of shifts over to the Mississippi River in late February and March. And those areas are important for eagles because there's open water where they can continue to feed and find and forage and find fish through the winter months when most of the lakes and rivers have frozen up. In particular, some of those areas where we see these large concentrations usually have a dam to keep the river open, or locks and dams like on the Mississippi River. But also, what's also very important is these expansive, undeveloped, and protected forested areas along some of the bluffs of these large rivers where the birds can then roost in the evening and winter or nighttime hours to escape some of the extreme cold, and then still be in close proximity to these foraging and open water areas during the daytime.
And this is kind of a good news story, right? I mean, if we go back 20, 40 years, we would not have the opportunity to see as many bald eagles in Wisconsin as we do today. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Our program here in the DNR, the Natural Heritage Conservation Program, has taken over some of the summer nesting surveys of bald eagles. And we do aerial flights each spring and do counts of active nesting eagles. And the numbers continue to go up. We're going to be coming out with our most recent annual report for the surveys from 2018, and the numbers went up once again. We're over or nearing 1,700 nesting pairs in Wisconsin currently. So every year we seem to be ticking up higher and higher. So it's a great story and a great recovery of the bald eagle in Wisconsin.
Now that's going out to see the big birds. You also mentioned a lot of people like to watch the birds in their backyards. What are some of the wintertime favorites for people with bird feeders out back?
Yeah, a lot, some of the birds that actually stick around in the winter, there's not a lot, but there are some, like the woodpeckers will stick around. Nuthatches, you can see two different species now, probably the white-breasted nuthatch, which sticks around most of the year, but also the red-breasted nuthatch, which is more of a northern species in the state. But we're seeing red-breasted nuthatches come down from further north in Canada. It's a really good year for them at backyard bird feeders. This year is also supposed to be a high number of finches. The reports are that some of these northern finches, the pine grosbeak, the evening grosbeak, crossbills, and redpolls, are coming down because a lack of seed crop and pine cone crop to the north in the boreal forest. So when that happens, we get what we kind of call an eruption of finches. So people should be on the lookout for some of these somewhat rare finches that might be coming down to their feeders this winter. So that would be something to watch out for.
Any basic advice for people who maybe are just getting started with a backyard feeder this year?
Yeah, certainly some of the best feed that they can provide would be black oil sunflower seeds. Those are desired by a bunch of different species, especially some of those finches. Niger or thistle is also good for finches. And then you can, certainly a lot of people do suet or peanut feeders, and those are good for the woodpeckers and for the nuthatches, like I said. Also, certainly in providing a water source, so with the winter time when a lot of the water is frozen, providing some kind of a heated water source can really attract a lot of birds to your backyard. And then certainly providing some kind of shrub cover or tree cover for the birds to move around and escape possible predators, so they could go from a bird feeder to a shrub patch or a tree. Some people actually put their Christmas trees after the Christmas season is over out into their yard to provide cover for some of these birds near their bird feeders. So doing stuff like that can really increase the number of birds that you'll see in your backyard.
Talking to Rich Stafen from the state DNR. He's a zoologist and conservation biologist in natural heritage conservation. We're talking about wildlife viewing around the state in our backyards and out in the state parks and beyond. Rich, let's go terrestrial now, get away from the birds. What kind of mammals are people seeking out as they go out to hike and with the intention of spotting them in the wild?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, certainly the hunting season just finished, the deer, the gun deer hunting season. So deer are certainly active this time of year. Another one that's really popping up now is we have a couple different herds of elk in the state. So people can go out and see the elk in northern Wisconsin. The Clam Lake area was one of the first locations where we had elk in the state, and they have a driving route around that area through some of the Forest Service lands with good locations to possibly see elk. The Black River State Forest was a new reintroduction for elk in Wisconsin, and there's locations throughout that state forest, including near Wazee Lake Recreation Area, would be a good place to look for them as well. Some of our other mammals, like bears and some of the other ones, are not active right now, so they're in hibernation, or some of them are also just really secretive and hard to find, like some of our larger canids, like wolves and coyotes, and also like bobcats and stuff like that. So they're a little bit more challenging, but I would focus more on probably elk and deer this time of year. One other thing I was going to mention, too, which is kind of cool for people that do put out bird feeders, another mammal that they might get a good look at would be a flying squirrel. We get lots of reports of southern flying squirrel that visits people's bird feeders after dark. So that could be another thing that people could keep an eye out for. If they have a light on their backyard or on their feeders, they could turn that on at night and see if they might be able to spot a flying squirrel flying around or visiting their bird feeder. So just something cool to keep an eye out for.
And Rich, I'm going to get a little unseasonal here. My favorite thing when I'm hiking to see is reptiles and amphibians. And I know winter, I'm out of luck, but I love spotting turtles and snakes, frogs. And I saw a picture, I think you'd put it up on Facebook a few years back, of a skink in Wisconsin. And I can hardly ever find these guys, I'll be honest. For when spring and summer roll around, do you have advice on where are good places to find these guys?
Yeah, so that's like the skink is one of our four lizard species. So finding sandy areas, so like along some of our larger river systems like the Wisconsin River, there's these kind of sandy outwash areas, and those are good places to find lizards. Also, we have kind of unique to Wisconsin, we have pine and oak barrens, so some other sandy habitats, and those are really good for lizards and also for snakes as well, and they're important for if they're close by to wetlands or water, they're important for turtles to come up there and nest as well. So that might be an area that people could check out for turtles and for lizards, like we were talking about, for sure.
And Rich, can you leave us with some thoughts on being courteous observers of nature? I know there are concerns about people disturbing animals. I've seen concerns now, people using drones to track wildlife and that being very disturbing to some species. How can we be good citizens as we're watching wildlife?
Yeah, that's a great point and very important thing to mention is that certainly if you're going to look for bald eagles or other owls is a really popular venture right now too. It's really good to keep your distance from them. One thing we recommend is to stay in your car. Actually, it serves as a good blind. The birds don't seem to mind the cars, but they do mind if people come out, get out of their car, and start walking towards them. So we definitely recommend that people give birds and raptors, owls, and eagles the safe distance so you don't disturb them. It's a really difficult time of the year for them with the cold weather and difficult conditions. So definitely recommend people staying in their car as much as possible.
Rich, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Glad to be here. Nice talking to you.
Rich Stafen is a zoologist and conservation biologist in natural heritage conservation for Wisconsin's Department of Natural Resources. He was with us to talk about how to enjoy watching wildlife in Wisconsin all winter long.